All right, it's shortly after 8:30 on September 25th, 2012. We're in the commission hearing room at the Public Service Commission in Bismarck, North Dakota for the administrative hearing in the matter of three Northern States Power Company cases, PU-10-657, PU-11-55, and PU-11-557. In September of this year, the Office of Administrative Hearings received a request from the Public Service Commission to provide an administrative law judge to preside as procedural hearing officer in this matter. My name is Alan Hoberg. I'm the duly designated hearing officer. We'll take appearances from the parties and commission counsel at this time, starting with Mr. Simser, please.
Zev Simser on behalf of Northern States Power Company.
And who do you have with you at table, please?
With me is Mr. Dave Cedarquist and Ms. Betsy Kopic, both of the company.
And those are your two witnesses today, correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Grumman, please.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mark Grumman on behalf of PSC advocacy staff. To my left is Chris Merrill and Mike Diller, also on behalf of staff. Mike Diller will be providing testimony today.
Thank you. And Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, please.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, commission advisor, and with me is Patrick Fawn, also commission advisor.
Thank you. I see one person present, members of the public or a member of the public. Do you intend to participate today?
No, I do not.
Maybe you could give us your name just for the record, please. Thank you very much. And, of course, to my left are two of the three commission members, Commission Chairman Brian Kalk and Commissioner Bonnie Fetch. Shortly, beginning with Commissioner Fetch, who has the electric generation and transmission portfolio, I'll ask you for your opening comments. But I'm going to give a brief summary and procedural setting and purpose for the hearing today. On February 29 of 2012, the Commission, pursuant to a settlement agreement in these three matters, issued an order on settlement. As part of that order, the Commission required Northern States Power Company to file a plan for performance-based regulation with metrics to measure and evaluate system reliability, including rate of return incentives and penalties to improve North Dakota service reliability. On June 1st of this year, NSP filed a reliability performance plan proposal with the Commission. On August 13th of this year, the Commission issued a notice of hearing scheduling today's hearing on NSP's proposal. The issue for the hearing today and for NSP's proposal is whether the proposal is reasonable and prudent and in the best interest of customers. That's the only issue for the hearing today. All right, at this time I'll call on commissioners. Commissioner Fetch, please.
As Judge Hoberg has noted, the issue today, the commission decided on a public hearing ordering to review the performance plan related to outage of service. The company filed its plan, and we're here to get testimony and make a determination whether the proposal is reasonable and prudent and in the best interest of customers. Look forward to testimony from Northern States Power and to hear the position of our advocacy staff.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just thank everyone, the company, NSP, advocacy staff, and advisory staff for being here today. We were talking about whether we needed to have this hearing or not, but right away I really wanted to have the hearing for a couple different reasons. One is to make sure that we could have a good chance to go back and forth and have testimony filed and go through it and have a really thorough hearing. But the second main reason was this has been a hot topic for a long time about reliability, and to make sure the public has a chance to be here and say their piece. And there might be folks listening in right now, too, that I have a vested interest. But for me today in the hearing, I mean, I've read through the testimony, it certainly makes sense, but some of the questions that might come up is just, you know, how did we get to these numbers? How can we continue to make reliability better? When I talk to members of the public, you know, people out there still expect, or not still expect, have come to expect 100% reliability. I don't think that's reasonable. But also I think that there's some line in there that is reasonable to expect. And so I think that what we're doing today is important for this case with NSP, but it also may be the trendsetter for what happens future in the commission. So I really look forward to a good hearing and getting a lot of input. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk.
We do have people listening in on the telephone bridge. As I understand it, there's a bit of a technical glitch. We tend to hear noises coming from those people out there. We certainly want you to listen in, of course, but we'd appreciate it if those of you out there on the telephone would put your telephone on mute so that we don't hear those noises in the hearing today. So I appreciate that. Thank you. Here's the hearing procedure we'll follow today. I'm going to call on, of course, the NSP first, and Mr. Simpson has indicated he has two witnesses. He'll call those witnesses and present three exhibits through those witnesses. And, of course, he'll ask them questions. Then I'll give Commission Advocacy staff an opportunity to ask questions and Commission Advisory staff an opportunity to ask questions, followed by the commissioners. I'll give them an opportunity to ask questions. Then I'll allow such further questions of the witnesses as the participants may have. Following the presentation by NSP, then I'm going to call on Commission Advocacy staff, and Mr. Gumman's indicated that he's calling Mr. Diller, and he's indicated prior to the hearing that he has one exhibit, and he'll offer that at that time, and it'll be the same procedure there. Mr. Gumman will ask questions, then I'll allow Mr. Simpson to ask questions on behalf of NSP, then Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle to ask questions, and then the commissioners, and then such further questions as counsel may have. The commission won't be reaching a decision today. They'll review all of the evidence later, and then they'll issue a final order regarding approval or not of NSP's proposed plan, or take other appropriate administrative action as they may deem as appropriate. Any party not agreeing, I guess that would be NSP, if you didn't agree with the commission's final order, you may have appeal rights or other rights under the Administrative Agencies Practice Act, Chapter 2832 of the North Dakota Century Code, and under the Commission's Rules, Article 6902 of the North Dakota Administrative Code. The burden of proof today is on NSP to show by the greater weight of the evidence that its plan is reasonable and prudent and in the best interest of customers. Any questions about the procedures today, Mr. Simpson?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
No, sir.
All right. Did you want to begin with an opening statement, Mr. Simpson?
I think we'll have Mr. Cedarquist give an opening statement on the stand.
Okay. Mr. Cedarquist, please. And I'll just give my admonition once. I'm required by law to tell all witnesses at administrative hearings that the maximum penalty for perjury in the state is a Class C felony, punishable by maximum 5 years imprisonment, $5,000 fine, or both. And, of course, perjury is essentially not telling the truth in a hearing such as this. Mr. Cedarquist, being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Simpson, please.
Mr. Cedarquist, good morning. Can you please just state and spell your name for the record?
David Cedarquist, DavidSederQuist.
And are you the same Mr. Cedarquist who signed the application in this proceeding as well as submitted a direct testimony in this proceeding?
Yes.
Before you should have two documents, one marked Exhibit 1 and one marked Exhibit 2. Can you please describe each of those exhibits?
Exhibit 1 is our reliability performance plan proposal. Exhibit 2 is my testimony.
If you were to give your testimony today live on the stand, would you give the same testimony as that you submitted?
Yes.
With that, the company offers Exhibits 1 and 2.
Any objection to Exhibits 1 and 2?
No, Your Honor.
No.
All right, I'll admit Exhibits 1 and 2.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Cedarquist, would you like to give a brief summary of the company's proposal?
Yes, please. I would. The reliability performance proposal that we have in front of the commission here was really a joint effort between the company and North Dakota PSC staff. To a large degree, it was put together to accomplish essentially three things. One was to comply, of course, with the settlement agreement and the commission order in our last case. It also provides a results-oriented framework of indicators and incentives that sort of complement the reliability initiatives that were already approved by the commission in the last case and that are currently being implemented. And then thirdly, to improve reliability to our customers in the state of North Dakota. The plan consists of really a trio of diverse indicators which measure our results at both broad system levels, high level, as well as at the individual customer experience. It establishes an excellence threshold for reliability performance with using the industry standard measure of SAIDI, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, which essentially measures the total amount of time that the average customer is without power during the given year. Achieving this excellence threshold will result in a potential financial award to the company of varying magnitudes. It really depends on the company's, if the company has an earnings shortfall. That kind of drives the level of the award. It also establishes a $50 credit for customers who experience four or more sustained outages during the year. And then lastly, it measures and reports our customers' perceptions and their level of satisfaction with the reliability of our service through customer surveys and questions that are focused primarily on reliability. Now, if adopted by the commission for the first time, our customers in North Dakota would be compensated for experiencing multiple outages. And under this plan, the company would have a better opportunity to earn its allowed return if it can deliver electricity with an average annual outage time far better than its normal performance. Here in North Dakota, we've already seen how performance-based regulation can positively influence company performance, benefit customers, and streamline regulation. And we believe that the proposed plan is understandable to customers and employees, and it will be effective in improving our reliability in the state, and therefore we believe it's in the public interest. Thank you.
Does that conclude the testimony?
Mr. Cedarquist, we have you had an opportunity to review staff's proposal related to the company's reliability plan?
Just briefly, been appraised of the testimony, yes.
Okay. Does the company have a position on that?
We're certainly willing to work with staff and move forward with their recommendations. We're willing to work with them to arrive at recommendations or positions that we can both support.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Simser. Mr. Grumman, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Cedarquist, could you refer to page 7 of your pre-filed testimony and just let me know when you were there and everyone is ready?
Okay.
Everyone, as you noticed in your pre-filed testimony, you discussed a number of factors that's utilized as part of reliability. What I didn't see was that you've added an engineer. Is that... If you could please just provide some testimony in that regard as far as your localized energy here in the state.
Yeah, we do have a new electrical engineer on staff in North Dakota. He has been tasked with executing the items that are shown here, the projects shown here on page 7, in particular the installation of the smart switches and the three-year program of removing our 500 MCM cable. That's what he's currently working on now. He's been on staff for a few months and is doing quite well. We're very pleased with him.
Thank you. The time escapes me, but if you could please provide some testimony. When the last outage in Fargo, if you could please explain when and what information you have in that regard.
Are you referring to the November transmission?
It must be the one in particular where there was a subcontractor involved and there were...
Yes. That outage occurred in November of 2011, about a year ago, and the company was doing some maintenance work in a couple of substations. There, If I recall, there was a subcontractor who was trying to do some pre-work before his portion of the project was to start, and he was in one of the substations and I guess was doing some testing, and it created a fault that caused the outage. So, mm-hmm.
Now, your testimony talks about how achieving reliability is somewhat of an art. That being said, that of course, clearly there's a lot of math and formulas, and there's an objective component to this as well. As a segue, I guess, sir, discussion concerning what you just indicated concerning the subcontractor, there's some discussion about how some of the factors are normalized, some situations. As far as the subcontractor itself, how is that included in the formula, and how, for lack of better words, from the ratepayer's standpoint, how is something like that taken into account, and how is that something avoided in the future?
Well, in a situation like that, extremely unusual, we dealt with that immediately with the subcontractor. And also, we had extensive reviews of the situation and the event that occurred to kind of a lessons learned analysis of that. So we believe we've made great, taken great steps to avoid having that reoccur. In terms of reporting, a large event like that, a significant event like that, would likely be normalized from the reliability data because of its unusual nature. We want to try to focus on more normal kinds of reliability results and keep the focus on things that would be more controllable. I don't know for sure if, in fact, that particular event was normalized, but using the IEEE methodology that we're proposing, which takes a look at customer minutes out in a given day to determine whether it's an unusual event or not, that one could very well have been.
This doesn't mean to be patronizing in any way, because certainly you have a number of years of experience and a good witness as well, but I'm going to ask a couple of follow-up. If it appears that maybe another witness is more acceptable, just let me know, but couple of things in particular of what you just discussed concerning the unusual nature of it. Would you equate this type of situation to, for instance, like a hurricane for something like, for instance, Con Edison is dealing with out east? Or how would you equate unusual? Or if you'd explain that further.
Well, certainly in the terms of what we're proposing here, unusual, an unusual event would be rather objective because it would be a mathematical calculation of how many customer minutes there were out in a given day, and how does that compare with historical averages and that kind of thing. So it's defined rather clearly, mm-hmm. in our plan. I don't know exactly what you're looking for by equating it with like a hurricane or some other event, but
And Ms. Kopic here will be able to, okay. to provide some more information as to normalization methods and the standards we're proposing to use.
Okay, thank you for that. And I'll follow up with her in that regard. I just have one other question, at least off the top of my head here. You were talking about great steps we're taking concerning the subcontractor. Now, I'm not an electrical engineer, nor have I worked for a power supply company, but just off the top of my head, if I had a situation like that, one of the things that I would do as a company is before I would send any subcontractor in, I would have an in-depth discussion with them, perhaps even have a liaison from the company with them. If you could just flesh out further steps, I'd be most appreciative.
Yeah, I'm not that intimately involved with the process that took place, but I do know that it was a subcontractor that was very knowledgeable of our system, maybe took that to sort of mean that he could get some of his work done ahead of time, you know, and so it was an unfortunate situation, but maybe Betsy can follow up or we can get back to you with more specifics. We did file a letter shortly after that event explaining in quite detail the events beforehand and the steps taken afterwards as well.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Grumman. Ms. Jeffco-Sanko, please.
I don't recall you answering this at the very end when you were talking about your willingness to work something out with staff, and if you did, I apologize, but what is your position on the staff's recommendation to strengthen the benchmark to reflect some of these initiatives you've already implemented from the rate case?
Well, we're certainly open to talk with staff and, again, try to make whatever modifications could be supported by both parties. We felt pretty strongly when you look at the overall plan, which, you know, the CME credits, which are the $50 credits to customers, that's a penalty-only type of measure, which could cost the company upwards of $200,000 a year if history is any guide. So just taking a look at that and the difficulty in achieving that excellence threshold, we felt that the 58 minutes that we had put in our application was reasonable and balanced. But we've had good history of being able to work with staff to again come to an agreement on different levels. So we're totally open to that.
I'm just going to assume that some of those conversations already occurred. So do you have specific response that you are willing to offer up today on the stand, or are you asking the commission to just allow you to try to talk to them further after this?
Right,
this
we'd hearing? Prefer the latter. That talk about the proposal that we put together, and then, as I believe is somewhat customary after the hearing, if so directed, we'd be very willing to sit down with staff and pursue closure.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I just to add to that, you know, it is more of an art than a science. Certainly there are tweaks that can be made. There are various moving components here. We can make adjustments one way or another, and I'm confident that we can arrive at something that's workable.
Is the company totally adverse to a penalty component in the earnings factor?
On the SAIDI measure?
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, given the one-sided structure of the CME indicator, the CME measure, we felt it was important in order to have balance in the plan is to have, you know, the award side only on the SAIDI. We think that still makes sense. But again, I'm not going to shut out any other suggestions or ideas. We'd be open to having those discussions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jeffco-Sanko. Commissioner Fetch, did you have any questions of Mr. Sudequist?
I do. Thank you. From what I am hearing and from what I see, the company seems to be like within 2 minutes of agreement with the commission staff on this proposal. Tell me, so the benchmark or the SAIDI that the company would like to see is 58.8 minutes, and the staff is recommending strengthening that by 2 minutes, bringing it down, as I understand it, to 56.8 minutes. 2 minutes doesn't seem like a lot, but I understand when you're calculating out and you say there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of considerations, it may be considerable. Can you tell me about that 2 minutes and how significant that 2 minutes is?
Sure. And I think Ms. Kopic can elaborate on this as well, but I think the way I look at it is that we are making a fairly sizable investment in the IntelliTeam smart switches, installing 25 of those switches in the Fargo area, and that's, you know, a fairly significant project that we are estimating could lower the SAIDI score by 2.8 minutes. So, just knowing that project has that kind of an impact would tend to give me pause over lowering the threshold another 2 minutes. It's a it would take a fairly significant project to get us down into that area. So that would be how I would respond to that, and perhaps Ms. Kopic would add something to that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fetch. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Geez, Dave, I'm going to get a lot soup to nuts here for a while, okay? You've been working in Fargo quite a period of time, and tell me how we explain this to the customer, how they're going to benefit this. I mean, because $50, why 50? Why not 200? Why not 20? I mean, how did you get to 50 other than that's just what the other states do?
Yeah, we primarily start with the $50 because that is the program that we are comfortable with, that we've executed in other jurisdictions. Staff seemed comfortable with that amount. I will say that unlike our other jurisdictions where that payout would occur after 5 interruptions, we're having it occur after only 3 interruptions.
Is it 3 or 4? Because the initial statement I thought I heard you said was 4. Then the testimony said 3. Which one is it?
It's more than 3.
More than three.
So you could say 4 or more. It's how you want to say it. But any customer that has experienced more than 3 interruptions, sustained interruptions, would be in line. So it's actually quite a bit more. It's going to result in a lot more $50 credits in North Dakota than it would in some of the other jurisdictions. So that was our approach to making it a little better of a credit as opposed to a higher dollar amount.
So how do we deal with the when the interruptions come? There has oftentimes been damage to the customers' homes. I mean, so that's nothing that I don't personally want to get into that. But that's where I think the $50 comes in for me. Is that the right amount? Because if a customer typically has damage, it's much more than $50.
Yeah, and typically, I mean, if a customer is going to have damage, it really doesn't really have any relationship to the frequency of outages. They could have one outage that year and it could damage. So I'm not sure there's a clear link there. This is more for the customer that has those repeated outages. In their minds, it seems like they're not being taken care of. This is sort of a small guarantee to them that we're going to be focusing on those areas, and if we miss it, they'll get compensation for it.
Is there the does it matter if you're an individual citizen in Fargo or if you're the Fargo Dome Authority? If you're out for, you still get your $50?
Yeah, it there's some slight nuances with residential versus commercial, because some commercial customers actually have more than one facility, one premise, one structure that's being served. So in those cases, they could stand to actually have multiple credits if a different facilities have more than 3 outages, then they would stand to have more than one credit. Similarly, if a residential customer would own more than 2 homes, they could also potentially benefit with 2 credits. But the more normal situation is that they own one home, and if they move, that accumulates. So if they move to another place and they have, say, 2 outages at one home and 2 more at their second home, that still will count as 4, and they'll get the credit.
So how are you going to practically keep track of all that?
Well, it is. We wouldn't have been so willing to implement the program here if we hadn't already gone through all of that in some of our other jurisdictions. The systems, the process has all been set up. From an incremental standpoint, there isn't any additional cost here to the company or time. So, yeah, no, it is we have systems that we query, and we even have some auditing that occurs manually after that to make sure that homes are, you know, being treated well and correctly. And so, but that process is all in place.
Okay, in the other states, you said you use $50 as a threshold. What's the minute threshold you use in South Dakota and Minnesota and Wisconsin? Commissioner Fetcher just talking about the difference in 2 minutes here, and what's the minute threshold that you use in the other states?
Oh, actually, we don't have the SAIDI goals or SAIDI targets that we have in other jurisdictions are structured differently than what we're proposing here. We're actually putting a target out there that's a real stretch, and that's why it's a one-sided award. The other states do have quality service plans where they have levels of service that if we go below, we'll be penalized for, but they're not stretching targets like what we're proposing here. So it's a different kind of approach in the other jurisdictions. And again, Ms. Kopic could touch on that in a little more detail.
Okay. The following up a little bit on Mr. Grumman's question, I think I understood what he said. He said when, you know, if it's a hurricane, I think that people would say, well, that's not a fault of the company. But his example of the subcontractor, the way in our previous discussions, XL is, NSP has really got rid of employees and subcontractors do all the work. So if XL is not held liable where a subcontractor makes some error, it doesn't seem like that makes sense to me.
Yeah, again, I would just sort of fall back on that was such an extremely unusual situation.
In general, if a subcontractor makes a mistake, so how do you define that gray area? Because to me, when I step back in the rate case, previous rate case, we're talking about this, I said, well, this makes sense to me. If the company does really well, they get extra money. Yep. If the company doesn't do very well, they lose money. But we're missing that big component to this.
Well, you know, the reporting that we would do with the commission and staff is to show which days we are excluding, and I would presume that if there is a situation similar to that, we would have a discussion about that. And we want to do the right thing, too. We want to have the reporting have good integrity, and so that might be a point where we would say, you know, this one was an ice storm. This one was a situation that involved human error. Let's talk about that one. So maybe that's something that we take a look at down the road. But that is a difficult, unusual situation, I grant you.
Okay, and I guess just to follow back up about the, so would you be against a component that you lower your rate of return if the company does not meet certain benchmarks for reliability? Because right now that's not in there, and that to me was a big thing. It still is a big thing.
That's something we'd have to discuss.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can discuss now. I have time.
Anything's possible, but, we would want to...
I don't think we've been very vague in that area that if the company has excellent reliability, I think that you should get more return. If the company has poor reliability, I think that there should be penalties.
Well,
to me is the best incentive to keep the reliability up there.
I think that we'd be open to that. I think where we start to get into a little bit of an issue is if that range is symmetrical with the 58 minutes that we're proposing and we set a symmetrical penalty of, like I say in my testimony, 85 minutes.
Right.
That's a pretty tough thing to penalize a company for an 85-minute Sadie score when 85 minutes puts you in the upper half or upper third of all the utilities participating in the IEEE survey. On it. So if you're going to make it symmetrical, that's a real tough, because we've had good performance in the past and you're basing it on history, that would be a tough way to do it. We could talk about putting a penalty phase that's, not quite as tough. And that's something that we could discuss if the commission's real concerned that, hey, we want to make sure you don't drop below a certain level either. That's something we'd be willing to discuss. But then we lose some of the symmetry, and we also lose a little bit of, do we have a measure out there that's really not going to be used in any way because it's too easy. So those are all discussions we need to have, but we're not averse to discussing the concept.
Well, obviously, North Dakota, we like to keep things what's good for us and do things our own way. But I think it's important to understand what other states are doing. So walk me through again how this is different than what you're doing in Minnesota, because that one, you said there are negative components to it.
And
if that was the way you have it there, why didn't you propose something similar here? Because we hear that argument a lot. This is how we do it there, so we want to do it.
Well, I mean, quite frankly, even it goes back to when we instituted the PLUS plan in the early part of the decade. One thing that North Dakota saw the value in that our other jurisdictions have really been reluctant to see the value in, and that's putting positive carrots out there for good performance right along with the sticks for penalties. Most states only want to penalize. They only want to ding the company if a certain level is not achieved. This plan follows much the same line of thinking that much can be done by putting a big carrot out there, putting a positive incentive. We do have, like I said, both components are in this proposal. We have the negative side with the with the credit measure, and we have the positive with the SAIDI. But that's the primary reason why it's different is, you know, the Commission in North Dakota has recognized the benefits of having balanced incentives, and many states don't. Now, again, I'll defer to Ms. Kopic, but I will say, in general, the other states have set levels of SAIDI and perhaps even other measures that if you go get, if you have performance that's worse than that, you will be penalized. But generally, those levels are not there. You got to be doing kind of bad in order to get penalized. They're kind of benign levels that don't necessarily incent better performance, but they're a level that the utility is going to do everything they can to stay out of trouble around. So again, the advantage here with a war like this is we're really going to we're going to catch a lot of attention internally with our folks, our planners, our reliability folks, to achieve that incentive by getting to a new level of reliability instead of just avoiding staying out of trouble.
So. I see your point. I never quite looked at it at first. I guess obviously when you pay back customers' money, that's a negative because the company's losing money. So you think that it'd be almost too much of having a give the customers money and having lower rate of return? It'd be better to have one or the other?
Well, I think if you look at the charts in my testimony and you see that North Dakota's average for the last 5 years has been 72 minutes, and that's led the entire company. It's better than many utilities in the area. That, yeah, it seems a little bit much to go after a utility that's got a great track record, you know, except for a few unusual events that occurred in 2011. I think that would be a little bit unbalanced and a little bit too much penalty.
So, Dave, do you have any idea why the other states aren't as concerned about reliability then? If I mean, Wisconsin has 30, you know, half hour more than North Dakota, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, well, is it? Granted, compared to other states, you're sitting pretty good. But of the investor owns that we hear a lot about Xcel just because you're in the population centers. I mean, I'm just trying to get a feel for why you're not hearing this in the other states and what is making North Dakota better in reliability.
Well, I think reliability is important in other states. They do have the quality service plans established there for.
So they maybe put the plans in place and they're just letting them run?
They're letting them run. There are a lot of reasons why reliability SAIDI scores differ by state. You know, there can be geographic reasons. There's urban versus rural. There's line miles. There's lots of reasons why states can differ. However, I just point out that customers in North Dakota who are our customers enjoy pretty good reliability. It's not like you can move somewhere else in the country and enjoy or have better reliability than what they're getting here in North Dakota.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. That was probably all I had.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let me just ask a clarification question here. You were talking about three outages or more than three in North Dakota, and you said five. Was it more than five in other jurisdictions?
I think it was, and Ms. Kopic can verify that.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Fetch, please.
Yes, I have one more question. The CME credits, you mentioned premises. I think I read somewhere that a residence that is a duplex, would that be considered, is that one or two premises? Would there be one or two credits?
There would most likely be two separate meters there that could qualify for credits if both tenants experienced more than three outages. Yes, they would not be treated as, they wouldn't have to like split a $50 credit or anything like that.
Okay. So it would depend on the metering. If a residence had one meter and they somehow say turned the basement into another apartment, that would not count as two. But if it were set up and there were two separate meters or a fourplex, four separate meters, would that be, each customer then would be considered separately?
Right, it is driven by the meters. We talk about premises because customers do move, and so we have to keep track of, and like I said, commercial customers have more than one building, so that's where the premise gets into the discussion. But the credits are awarded based on customers with their own meter.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further questions of Mr. Cedarquist? Mr. Simser?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, please.
I just wanted to follow up a little bit on the other states. Like, just take Minnesota, for example, first. The performance motivators there are found in rules, like service quality rules, or an individualized plan, or a combination.
There is a tariff in Minnesota that spells out the service quality targets. And so we...
Is that required?
Yes, I believe it is.
By rule. I'm asking, but I'm guessing. Rule.
I don't know. It could even be statute. It could be a law. I am not familiar. I can follow up with that if you'd like. But I know that we have the tariff that explains it, how it all works.
Okay, and then any individualized additional requirements in Minnesota based on some situation that was, you know, some negative situation with the company?
I believe in Minnesota they have, along with the multiple outage, I believe if you've had an extended outage of 24 hours or more, there's a credit for that, but not familiar with the details. So they do have that.
How about South Dakota?
South Dakota does not have this program.
So there's no requirement or a tariff or anything, and no special case requirement on the company from some incident or anything. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further questions of Mr. Cedarquist? Thank you, Mr. Cedarquist. Mr. Simser, your next witness, please.
The company calls Ms. Betsy Kopic. Betsy.
Ms. Kopic, did you hear the admonition I gave earlier in regard to perjury?
Yes.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Simser, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Kopic, can you please state and spell your name for the record?
Betsy Kopic, B-E-T-S-Y, C-O-P-P-O-C-K.
And what's your position with the company?
I'm a principal specialty engineer.
And as principal specialty engineer, what kind of services do you provide?
I work in the Electric Distribution System Performance Group, which is looks at reliability across all four operating companies for Xcel Energy.
Are you the same Betsy Kopic that submitted testimony in this proceeding?
Yes.
If you were to submit your testimony today, would it be the same as the one you submitted?
Yes.
With that, I submit Exhibit 3.
Any objection to Exhibit 3?
No, Your Honor.
No.
I'll admit Exhibit 3.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Kopic, we heard some good questions of Mr. Cedarquist, and a lot of them got into a rather technical nature, and I was wondering if we might just spend a few minutes trying to address some of those issues, given your technical expertise. I think the first fundamental question worth discussing is an additional 2 minutes of Sadie a lot?
I think it really is. When you start to look at the types of outages that you can have and why you have those outages, beyond events that are instigated because of weather, they're very difficult to improve. You have, as Mr. Cedarquist said, we have lots of moving parts. When you look at a distribution system, you have many, many things that can break. And to work hard to improve those things, it's a diligent effort to come up with 2 minutes. We've got an excellent performance here, and so it makes it even more difficult to improve beyond that excellent performance.
With relation to CME outages and CME credits, is there a significant additional level of difficulty to obtain the four or more outage standard that we're setting as opposed to the five or more outage standard that is present in some of the other jurisdictions?
Yes, when we looked at it, we did a rough look at the number of outages, number of customers that would experience more than three outages and more than five outages, and it's about a tenfold increase of customers that it would experience more than three versus the more than five. So it's a big step increase when you start to talk about that change.
Are you familiar with this SADE floors that were raised in other jurisdictions? Do you have some knowledge?
I have some knowledge on it, yes.
Can you quantify, for example, the SADE baseline that the company is required to meet in Minnesota?
The SADE baseline, I don't remember the exact number, but it was set a number of years ago, and it is set above the average of what it was, and I can't remember the exact number, but it is only a penalty in Minnesota, and it was based on the averages of the previous of the early 5 years. I think 1995 to 2000. It's very old data that they're using there, and it is set so you only have a penalty. They have three different levels of penalties that they incur there.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Simser. Mr. Grumman, please.
Thank you. In the context of this hearing, when I say the terminology public damage event, what would that mean to you, or what does that mean?
That can mean a variety of things. The one that comes to mind most frequently to me is somebody goes in and they're doing road construction, or they're building, putting in other types of utility infrastructure, and they go and cut our line.
Mm-hmm. Let's say I'm driving a car, or I guess I used to be a prosecutor, so I had a DWI where guy ran into a power pole and, you know, and broke the distribution line. Would that be a public damage event as well?
Yes, it would.
Okay. As far as a public damage event, how is that taken into account in Sadie and Katie for your terminology that you've given to us?
In what we're looking at in Sadie and Katie, we don't exclude any type of event except for the major event days.
So it's not excluded, it's not normalized public damage
events?
Correct,
it is included in your Sadie.
Okay. If you could please refer to page 12 of your pre-filed testimony and just let me know, or everyone for that matter, when you're ready.
I'm ready.
And more specifically towards the top of the page, so it'll be lines 3 through 5. I'm going to read something. Using meter counts instead of premise counts results in a slightly different SADE number, but again does not materially change the overall trends. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, what I'd like for you to explain to us is does not materially change. If you could just flesh that out further, appreciate that.
When you're looking at a SADE number, you're looking at the definition of SADE. I have it on page 3, the top of page 3. That is the total customer minutes of sustained outages. And in the numerator and the denominator, you have the total number of customers served. So when you go from premises to meters, both the numerator and the denominator will change. So we're going from around, I can't remember exactly, but from 55,000 to 80,000 customers in your denominator. But your numerator also changes because now you've got more meters than you have premises. So that number goes up. So although it can be, it'll change a little bit, you're not going to see a change in the trending of your reliability numbers.
Mathematically speaking, has there been any modeling? I mean, when we're saying not materially, like how much of a percentage-wise are we talking?
I don't remember.
But it would be incidental. Is that your testimony?
Yes.
Thank you. You're here for Mr. Cedarquist's testimony. Is that correct?
Yes.
And we had a discussion about unusual events in the subcontractor event. If you could explain, provide some testimony in that regard.
I'm not familiar with that event, but what I can tell you is when you look at the SADE number, you want to be able to look at things trending over time and what happens on a day-to-day activity level and how you can improve that day-to-day activity level. And that's why we internally want to look at that SADE number and why we want to exclude other events. Those big major events, we look at them no matter what. We want to be able to make sure that those big major events are not – covering up what's going on with the rest of the system on a day-to-day event. So that's why we want to exclude those and look at those separately.
Well, I like your use of the word improve. As I asked and Commissioner Kalk asked as well concerning how can we improve another situation by the use of subcontractors, which is something that perhaps you're using more. What have you done to improve that situation so that that does not happen again?
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. With Joel, I know you have two witnesses. Is there anyone else that could further flesh that out?
We could ask Mr. Limoges and see if he might have some information, but I don't know that he was necessarily prepared to discuss exactly the use of contractors on the NSP system, and it may make more sense for us to follow up once we can find the right people and go ahead and try to get you good, accurate information.
I respect that. You know, I'm assuming there'll be some type of short break involved, too. I know that's what we've had it in the past. Maybe you could have a discussion with Joel, and then we could have a further discussion on that.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah, why don't you take that up on a break, Mr. Simpson?
Sounds good.
Just one moment, Your Honor. Either of you. I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Gruen. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, please.
Pat and I have a couple of questions on the chart at the back of your testimony, that Sadie chart 2007-11, and I think it's the next to the last page. So that I understand the significance of the 2-minute improvement argument. And just, explain if we're misunderstanding, but if you look at these North Dakota bars, 7, 8, and 9 are fairly low. 10, of course, is higher. 11 is somewhere in the middle. But it looks to be like they're changing by a lot more than 2 minutes. I mean, like by 20 minutes or 30 minutes. So maybe you could just explain the chart and the relationship to the 2-minute measure.
They do go all over the place. A large, significant piece of that is weather impacts. And it's very difficult to define exactly the weather impact, but we can see things by looking at the number of vegetation outages we have every year. And also we can look at it by looking at how many lightning strikes we've had in our service territory each year, and we can give a trend for that. Those are really difficult to sort completely out and be able to push those and completely separate them. But that improvement to improve the system, the infrastructure of our system, the 2 minutes, it's very difficult. That's where replacing cable that we're talking about, you might be able to get some improvement there. You get some improvement by putting in the automated switches that we're going to be putting in because that restores outages more quickly. Those are the types of things that are very costly to do. The other things are to do maybe find older equipment that's failing. Those are very hard to trend and keep track of. So that's why that 2 minutes is difficult.
I still need you to connect the 2 minutes to the 20 and 30 minute changes here. What would we be seeing if you made or didn't make? I mean, this bar would only move by a hair if you're making or not making the benchmark.
The numbers you're seeing in those good years in 2007 and 2009, those were very good years with very minimal weather, and we're asking to try to be right there and beat that.
Because they're at 5860 or something like that in that neighborhood.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, do these numbers have to do with averages? Like you said, they're all over the place, but are you talking averages then? Or maybe that's not a right question.
Well, the proposal looks at these 5 years numbers and averages them, and that is where it's coming from.
So it's the average 2 minutes on the average is the difficulty for you.
Well, we're going with average plus we're compensating our, for the 2.8 minutes for the installation of the IntelliTeam switches and then a 15% improvement over that.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, please.
The very can you just explain that very last sentence that you just answered his question? I didn't quite catch.
Hey, to calculate our excellence threshold, we looked at the average, which is what you're seeing if you were to average these numbers here for North Dakota.
For these years?
I mean, for these years.
Okay.
And then we adjusted that by 2.8 minutes. And then we took that number and lowered it by 15% to get our excellence threshold.
And you may have answered this, but why did you adjust it by the 2.8 to begin with?
We calculated a rough estimate of where we what we thought the IntelliTeam switches would improve.
Okay. Yeah, I did hear that, but I...
The reliability.
Is it an appropriate interpretation of this chart to conclude that it is easy for these bars to go up and hard for them to go down? It's a lot easier for them to...
Yes.
Go up and not down. I would like permission for Mr. Fawn to ask a question. He has some questions on normalization, if that's okay.
Sure. Mr. Fawn.
Well, I just noted that on page 5 and 6 of your testimony, you're talking about... really changing the normalization method at this point in time. I just thought it was coincidental that it would be at this point in time that you'd change, would be wanting to change the method, the normalization method. Can you tell us why you want to do that?
Overall, as the company has moved to each jurisdiction on any new quality of service plan or anything related to that, we're proposing that we move to the IEEE normalization method. It's a consistent method that's used across the U.S. and Canada.
Oh, yeah. Why at this time, I guess?
Because it's an opportunity to move towards something that's consistent. There was no other chance to do that.
We're looking at an average. I mean, your excellence threshold is based on an average of 5 years.
Correct.
That is based on historical type of normalization?
Of the IEEE normalization.
Oh, you've adjusted, you've made an IEEE normalization for all those years then?
Yes.
Okay. All right. The other thought that I had was that in the chart when we were talking about how it's easier for the numbers to go up than it is for the numbers to go down.
Right.
And therefore, maybe the stick approach to the to improving performance is a better way to go, because we don't want those numbers to go up at all. We don't want the SADE numbers to go higher, and if it's easier for them to go higher, we should put our threshold at a point where it keeps the numbers up, the SADE numbers low.
I think that's how other jurisdictions have looked at it and have wanted to do it for that reason. I think with this method that we have where you have the pro and con, as I think Mr. Cedarquist said, the carrot and the stick method, I think that's a pretty good balance that way. It does give us something to strive for to improve. Since it is difficult to go there, we're going to try to do that. If you put a penalty on the higher end, there could be that reason that you just work only hard enough to get to that upper point or maintain below that upper point instead of trying to strive to improve it.
That's all I have.
Thank you. Commissioner Fetch, please.
Before we leave the chart, let me see if I understand this correctly. The green is North Dakota, and the 5 years represented here, the green bars are the actual SATE scores, is that correct?
Yes, those are the SATE scores looked at when you've normalized through IEEE, the IEEE methodology.
Okay. So then for your performance plan, you took an average of those and used that average of these 5 years in the calculations.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay. All right, on pages, let me have just a moment. The new, newly installed IntelliTeam switches, or mm-hmm. I think they've been referred to as smart switches, maybe, yeah, in the Fargo area. At this time, you really have no idea what impact that's going to have, if that's going to have a more positive impact or maybe not so much. Is that correct?
For sure there'll be a positive impact. How big of an impact, we're not sure of.
But you did figure that in. That's part of your in the calculations and coming up with the excellence target.
Correct. That's the 2.8-minute adjustment.
Okay. The other questions I had, I think Mr. Fawn got to in the normalization. But let me have just a moment, Your Honor. As I understand, then your testimony, trying to achieve an additional 2 minutes improvement, considering all the factors that go into it, you would consider that to be very difficult to reach, because you were saying something about it would be difficult to find out or figure out where else to bring that improvement from. Can you expand on that for me a little?
I would say it is difficult, and it's kind of the point of diminishing returns, in a sense of trying to find where can you focus your money to find the 2 minutes for improvement. It's very difficult to use money wisely and be able to find something that can improve on 2 minutes without spending inordinate amount of money to do that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Commissioner Fetch. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Betsy, for your testimony. I mean, a lot of good questions out of the advocacy staff and advisory staff, so I don't have a lot on the formulas and all that. Just your job now is monitoring, analyzing, reporting system reliability. Is that for the whole Xcel Energy or just what?
Yes, I look at all four states.
Okay. So,
or four operating companies, sorry.
Gotcha. All right. What was the reliability of the system 10 years ago compared to now?
I can't remember the exact number, but one of the things that's happened since 10 years ago is we've made improvements in how we, in our outage management system, what we call today an outage management system. So today it's all computerized on how we enter the outage data. And so typically you're finding across the utility industry that the reliability numbers have seemed to have gone up in the last few years as companies have moved to outage management systems because they're catching, would be a term, every outage, and they're documenting it appropriately.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where I was going, is that, you know, my dad worked for the power company for 40 years, and they started putting lines out there in the 60s, and it got better because better equipment, better monitoring. What I'm getting at is we're always making reliability better. And so to make the company push a little harder seems like that would be a reasonable thing for a commission to do. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that?
I do, and I think that 15% is a real stretch goal for us.
Okay. So when you look at reliability across the system, is there one area that, money aside, that you think that should be improved? If you had unlimited resources, what area would you attack first for reliability?
Probably some older areas that have had the same types of equipment if they are deteriorating.
So are we doing that in North Dakota, right, with the new position of that electrical engineer? I think that was one of the goals.
Right, they're putting said. In the – they're replacing that cable that's old.
How about it seems to me that – I mean, that makes sense, to replacing the old cable. But in this state, right now in North Dakota, we have a big push on call before you dig and outages that happen because of things you can't necessarily control. How do you look at those from your position where you can't really control them, but they really have an impact on your system? I mean, I guess where I'm going through this is that I think that you can control everything. If you've got a bunch of subcontractors that are doing things that they or if you've got Mark's example, Grumman, if you've got somebody that runs into your tie line pole, you can be involved with local officials. You can go after that individual to recover costs. So there are ways you can control those things. So I don't think it's as easy as just saying, oh, we can't do it.
We do have a damage prevention group within the company, and I don't know the details of their work, but they work to prevent those type of outages, mostly looking at cable cuts and making sure that we do good identification of the lines and penalizing them when they don't. When they do cut our lines after we've identified them, or if they haven't asked to, if they haven't participated in call before you dig.
Okay, so I bet Mike knows the answer to this right off the top of his head over there. But let's say the situation like Mr. Grumman is talking about, where someone comes in and damages your infrastructure, you go out and recoup monies back from them. That just gets put into the general fund, if you will. At some point in time, that's considered a revenue. Or do you ever go after individuals that?
You'd have to talk to somebody in claims, but I think they do, if they can identify them. But that's looking for just the cost of us having to fix the facilities that we break.
Right.
Or they broke.
Not the customer outage portion of it.
Correct.
Okay. I don't think I actually have any more questions for you. I'd probably have some more questions just in general. Maybe after we break, we'll figure out where to go with them. After you hear the advocacy staff's testimony.
Right.
Because, I mean, I just, for general group here, I'm still hung up on this. What are we trying to do here? We're trying to improve reliability. That's the goal here. So I think there's got to be a clear incentive to do that. There also has to be a clear stick if we don't do that, because we want to push the envelope. And I appreciate all the state analysis, but we're talking about what's going on in North Dakota.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. And perhaps when we talk about closing this, we'll talk about how that's going to be done, too.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Simser, any further questions of Ms. Kopic?
I do have a few, Your Honor.
Please.
Ms. Kopic, I'm wondering if we can talk about normalization for a little bit. We've all been looking at the graph on Schedule 2 of your testimony. And, you know, we've talked about the company moving towards the IEEE method and what exactly you're normalizing out. And I guess my question for you is do these normalized numbers also account for a good weather year or a bad weather year or something to that effect?
These numbers do account somewhat. You cannot normalize for every little storm. That's not the intention, because the intention is to look at your system and normalize out for events that aren't that are not what you predict on a day-to-day basis for your system.
And so some of these good years, 2007, 2009, reflect weather or other events as much as or reflect that those things you can't control as much as they reflect things you can control.
Correct.
Okay. When you talk about older things you would change if you had all the resources in the world, you know, replacing older equipment, we've talked a lot about public damage. In your opinion, does the CME measurement sort of allow the company to both identify localized areas that they wouldn't see on a system-wide basis with SADE?
Yes. I think the CME measure is an excellent measure. As the utility industry has gone from a very utility-focused way to look at reliability to much more of a customer view of the reliability, I think that's been an excellent progression over the years, and I think CME is right there where you want it. You're focusing on the customers that are experiencing that poor reliability. You're acknowledging that poor reliability, and you're trying to do something about it because we do monitor it and look at ways to improve those areas that are experiencing multiple interruptions.
I don't believe I have anything further.
Thank you, Mr. Simpson. Mr. Grumman, anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco. Anything further?
Just one question on this CME proposal. Don't you think with the improvements that are in place that the estimate for the North Dakota CME payment would be on the low end? You know, I think that either you or Mr. Cedarquist testified that the range would be $20,000 to $200,000 based on previous experience, but with the improvements that are being implemented, isn't it more likely that that annual number would be on the low end as opposed to the high end, and not necessarily then equal to that first increment in the performance bonus?
It could be. I haven't looked at comparing where the improvements we're making and if they are associated with CME customers.
It seems like the tree trimming plan and the replacement cable would be associated. I mean, I don't have no expertise in this, but just kind of the average person conclusion would be that they would be associated with reducing the frequency of CME.
It could be. Our goal today is if a cable experiences a problem, we go and replace it after that first problem. You could have more before we get a chance to replace it, but we're already doing something very aggressive in the replacement program. So to know if it's to get there to four outages, I don't know if that it's going to change anything materially. I don't have enough information to make that statement.
Would we then also not have enough information to know that it's likely to be that high? I mean, we don't know either way, correct?
Well, we looked at the historical information, and that was what we were basing it on, if it was to stay the same.
And how many years history did you use for that, five same years?
I think 5 years.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Fahn, did you have a question?
Is it for the CME index and the and the outages for customers, the business customers treated outages treated exactly the same as a residential customer outage?
Correct.
Okay. The other question I had was is for the major event outages that are excluded or normalized from the SADE index? Now, the example that we talked about earlier was a contractor caused a major outage. It sounds like that kind of an outage would have been excluded or normalized from the SADE index to me. Do you think it was?
I believe that one was excluded.
Okay, isn't that something that the company can do something about to improve that?
That is. If you remember that what we're trying to do when you look at a SADE number is you're trying to improve your day-to-day performance, and you don't want to take that large outage that you had and mask your day-to-day performance. So if you leave it in there, The next year, it looks suddenly like you improved your day-to-day performance. And we don't want to mask that and not look at our performance and try to improve it and try to keep it. All that does is make it look like we did better when it was really, now it was significant, but it was just one event. And we want to look at those separately and really do kind of a case by case on an event that large.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions of Ms. Kopic? Thank you. Perhaps it's in light of the fact that we may identify somebody else that can be here today to answer some questions, and I'll let counsel talk about that, but it might be wise to take a 10-minute break here before we take the next. You don't have any further evidence, Mr. Simpson, is that correct? Yeah, so let's take about a 10-minute recess here so you can discuss whether or not we can get some more information to answer some of these questions that weren't answered with people you can have available today. If not, then we'll have to discuss whether we need to do that. So let's take a 10-minute recess.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. It says one of two.